Lecture 18, Sex and Gender.
Welcome back to this, our 18th lecture in the series on ancient Greek civilization. In our last lecture, as we looked at the phenomenon of theatre, of drama in the Greek world, I tried to present the argument that this was one area in which the experience of the Greeks may have resembled that of our own world. We have, after all, Greek plays still being produced, and quite clearly our sense of drama is derived from the Greeks. But I wanted to suggest that even though there seem to be similarities, there are actually deep divides between ourselves and the Greeks when it comes to the aesthetic experience of ancient drama, when it comes to understanding the religious context of ancient drama, which I argued was actually very important, and finally to understanding the psychological impact of ancient drama. I argued that that institution really worked for the Greeks in a way that was very different from the way in which we approach drama, whether it be tragedy or comedy, in our own society. This theme of apparent similarity and potential difference is one that I've tried to explore on a couple of occasions. We saw also that in the experience of democratic life, the Athenian conception of democracy was not the same as ours at all. We saw it also in the question of religion, where finally we came to the conclusion that there were aspects of ancient religion which actually were quite close to our own, even though they looked markedly different. If there is one area, however, where the difference between the Greeks and ourselves is quite marked and dramatic, it is in the area of sex and gender. The question of what makes a man, the question of what is masculinity, of what is the correct way for women to behave and what is the role of women in society. These are all questions to which the Greeks gave answers that were quite different from the range of answers that we tend to give in our own society, particularly on the question of homosexuality, where our sense that homosexuality tends to be the opposite of heterosexuality is not something shared by the Greeks. In fact, homosexuality in the Greek context is viewed in some quarters as part of the coming of age of young men and is actually a prelude that will lead on into, in fact, a quite orthodox heterosexual life. So I want to begin then by talking first of all about the Greek attitude towards homosexuality and particularly the Greek construction of homosexuality, contrasting with our own conception of this term and our own wider concept of masculinity. When Philip stood at Chaeronea and surveyed the battlefield in 338 after he had vanquished the Greeks, he is supposed to have looked down on the dead of the Theban sacred band and to have said, "No one should consider these men guilty of any shameful act." Now, who was the sacred band and why would Philip be making this remark? The sacred band, in fact, was a battalion of the Theban army, which it was believed was made up of matched pairs of lovers, the younger men fighting all the more valorously because they were there with their older lovers watching them, and the older lovers fighting all the more valorously so that they would not be shown to have behaved shamefully in front of the young men that they loved, each proving themselves worthy of the other. This is a clear example, I think, of the way in which the expression of homosexuality in the Greek world is not going to be like anything with which we are familiar. Hundreds of drinking cups are found in excavations, particularly in Athens, that show the term kalos written on it, followed by a name. Kalos is the adjective that means beautiful, and it is a masculine adjective. It must mean such and such a boy or man is beautiful. These are the cups that Athenian men were using at their symposia, their drinking parties, where they were regularly toasting the beauty of the young men whom they were hoping to seduce. And fairly clearly, if we look at the artistic conventions of Greek culture, we see that this all occurs within a much broader cultural perspective, namely the appreciation of male beauty. It was quite commonplace in the 6th, 5th and 4th centuries to show naked male figures. Very few women are ever shown naked. The statues of young girls, chori, maidens, are always clothed, and it is only really in the Hellenistic period that we will find statues showing Aphrodite, the goddess of sex, naked. But while she is an exception in the realm of women, it is habitual and normal to celebrate the beauty of a man by showing a naked male heroic body.